Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and happy holidays as well to wherever you might be tuning in from. Hopefully it's as nice wherever you are as it is here in sunny Southern California. Today, we're doing a special show on millennials. I've already done one or two shows thus far on what it's like for employers who are trying to hire millennials, and I thought, in fairness to all the millennials out there, it would be great to hear what's it like having these different stigmas attached to you, such as not being hardworking or being somebody who's entitled. And so today I've chosen somebody, a millennial, who I truly respect and admire quite a bit. This afternoon we have Zach Griffiths on the show with us. And Zach is from Canada, which already makes him, gives him an extra point in my books. My husband's Canadian and I naturally love the Canadians. And Zach actually grew up in Canada and is ranked 8th in the world as a junior golfer and played college golf for a couple of years at the University of Nevada and went on to be a professional golfer for 3 years and eventually transitioned into becoming a real estate agent. But his long-term goal is actually finishing a civil engineering degree next year at Cal Poly Pomona. So thanks so much for being here with us, Zach. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on, Jen.
Yeah, it's so great because, you know, you hear so much out there about millennials. And hey, I'm a millennial. I'm right at the cusp there. But millennials often get a bad rap and sometimes can be, you know, said that, oh, they're not hardworking and they don't really put in much effort on things or they're not very proactive. And what I love about your story, Zach, is that you're the epitome of a hardworking millennial, which is not always sometimes what you hear about millennials. So tell our listeners a little bit about your journey and how you came to become a professional golfer.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that you think that of me, first off. And
I wouldn't say it if it wasn't true.
Yeah, I was raised in a family where we were just taught, you know, to work hard. Growing up young, we always had jobs and we were doing stuff for my dad. He was a construction worker. And with golf, it was really centered on a lot of structure. Like, I was at the course doing specific things to improve my game every single day. I wasn't just out there hitting golf balls or going through the motions. It was a really strict and rigorous routine that kind of taught me to improve on little stuff every day, and then that's kind of helped carry into everyday life, transitioning from golf into these other careers like you talked about. It's really kind of gave me a good work ethic and a structure to kind of go off of and to organize myself by. So it's really helped me in that aspect.
Now, do you feel like, I know you've obviously been a junior pro golfer and a professional golfer, when you look at some of your counterparts in golf or real estate or even in college currently, do you find that everybody has the same work ethic as you, or do you find it to be more of an anomaly?
No, yeah, definitely not. Like, I can see why a lot of millennials are kind of, you know, grouped into this kind of stereotype of being lazy and you know, being on Snapchat or whatever all the time. And, you know, that's just, I definitely see a lot of millennials that are like that, but it's, you know, it may be a majority, but it's definitely not all the millennials. There's, you know, there's a lot of hardworking kids out there, you know, 30 and under, or, you know, whatever age you want to specify millennials as, but there's definitely a lot of hard workers out there. And I think it's really kind of based on how you're raised and, you know, how you were brought up by your parents. And but I can, like I started saying, I can definitely see why a lot of millennials are put into that, you know, that category of being lazy and you know, so on.
And how do you think that helped you when you were starting off in golf, having that discipline and that work ethic that your family taught you? How did you marry that into creating a career as a professional golfer at a very young age? For those of you who don't know, Zach is 23 years old, very young to be where he's at in his golf career.
Yeah, so I mean, it definitely helped because golf is such a long road as far as a career goes. It's really it's a marathon, you know, as opposed to a sprint, if you want to put it that way. It's really a lot of small steps done well, and you know, that's gonna pay off in the long run, and that's gonna reflect your results. You know, you can go out to the golf course and you can just go through the motions and you can hit golf balls and go out and play and stuff and have fun. But it's really, you know, you got to go out and have fun, obviously, but it's really, you know, like anything in life, it's that structure and that end goal where you're really just, you're using all these small building blocks to kind of build a foundation. And then, you know, upon that foundation, you're going to build the structure, just like building a home. You're going to build the structure and you're going to build a strong, building for your career or your, golf game in my case. And now, you know, that's why I'm going to school for engineering and stuff. I want that solid foundation for my career in that.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, in your situation specifically, because you have several different avenues that you're currently, at the same time, concurrently kind of working at. You're doing the golf thing, and at the same time, you're doing the real estate thing, and then you're also pursuing along the same lines and going to school full-time to finish an engineering degree. So what's that like to be so diversified and focusing on so many disciplines, so many different areas at one time? Do you find it hard? Is it distracting?
No, I don't find it hard or distracting. It's really, you know, I really enjoy learning all this stuff and building my knowledge and exposing myself to different careers so I can really, you know, choose what I love to do. And like, right now, I really feel like I want to be a civil engineer. I want to approve home plans and industrial plans and stuff like that, and I'd like to own my own business in that someday. But, you know, at the same time, right now, I really enjoy working with real estate clients and doing all that, closing deals, and I love how personable real estate is and how you get to interact with all these different people. It really fascinates me, just really, you know, talking to different people and understanding what their needs are and, you know, what we can do to help them and stuff, and really developing a friendship with them at the same time. So I like doing all these different things because I really, you know, I want to figure out exactly, you know, what it is in this life that I'm passionate about doing, what I can see myself doing for, you know, the next 50 years of my life. And so that's why I'm kind of exposing myself to all these different things. And it is hard. It's lots of work going to school. And like every morning I get up at 4 o'clock and I go to the gym for a couple hours, and then I go to work from 7 to 4, and then
wow.
I go to school from, you know, 5 to 8. So it's a really packed day, but it's really, I feel like it's worth it. And, you know, I'd rather be doing what I'm doing than, you know, sitting on the couch or, you know, on Snapchat or whatever. But so I really do enjoy it.
Yeah, something interesting that I got out of what you just shared is it's a pattern I've actually seen with a lot of the millennials on the job hunting side that we work with a recruiting firm, and that's that millennials really want to find out what they're passionate about, and it's very non-linear. I feel like, I know I'm on the cusp, but even my generation and my parents' generation, they had this idea of, I do X, and then Y, and then I'll get to Z, and it was very linear, which I think is how our parents' generation did it, and they wound up in the same job for 10, 20, 30, 40 years. And what I find is so interesting about the generation that's coming up and the millennials right now is that I think they saw what happened to their parents who did one thing, did it well for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, and then got laid off and then lost their homes and their savings and so many things. And I'm wondering almost if not just you as an individual, Zach, but if millennials in general are shying away from the linear job, because like you said, if you have a foundation of only doing one thing, you're going to be in a real bind, just like many of our parents found themselves when they were in the middle of the recession, because they had only done one thing for 20 or 30 years, versus somebody with multiple facet skills like yourself, where you have a degree in engineering plus real estate plus a background in golf, you have all these different avenues that you could pursue. Would you say that's fairly accurate?
Yeah, I agree with that, Jen. A good example is my dad growing up. You know, he owns 3 construction businesses back in Canada and a snow removal business. He does really well. He came from a very poor family, and he's worked really hard. But I have a really good relationship with my dad, and when I talk to him about it, you know, he kind of explains to me, he's like, you know, if I could do it over again, I would have gone and got my architecture degree. And, you know, he's like, that's what I was really passionate about, but I was just, you know, at the time I was more concerned with making money and, you know, providing for the family, which he's done really well. He's, you know, he's done amazing for himself. But when I talk to him about it, I can really tell that his passion was for architecture. and that's something he wishes he would have done. And I think if, you know, that, but I think as far as the millennials go and being more non-linear than the Gen X, I think it's really, you know, we can thank the Gen X for that, because I feel like we've learned from them, and they've kind of passed, you know, that knowledge on to us, and they've been like, you know, this is the way we were raised, and, you know, this is kind of the linear path that we were on. But, you know, there's so many more options out there. And when you look at it in the long term, I mean, I'm taking a couple more classes. I think it's a year and a half more of schooling for me. And I'm going to have quite a few more opportunities for myself if I choose to go in engineering field than I would just, you know, keep going with real estate and golf. And so I think Gen Xers have really kind of put it into perspective for us. And they've really, you know, provided us with a clearer understanding of, you know, all the different careers that there are and opportunities there are.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. It's so funny. As you know, Ian, my husband and I are avid Survivor watchers. And for any of our listeners, spoiler alert, I'm about to share what happened. But in the most recent Survivor, they had a very interesting, what did they call it, like team division that they had never done before, where it was actually the Gen Xers versus the Millennials. And the interesting thing that they noticed is that the Gen Xers were very tried and true and based every decision on loyalty. And what the Millennials did is, that I think they called it trust clusters during the show, is they found people that they could trust for whatever that next vote is or whatever that next thing is. And I think that correlates to what you're saying about education and a foundation, is you might have a really great relationship with somebody today, and it might get you somewhere and it might not, but it could be like a trust cluster for what's right now, versus I think the Gen Xer generation is much more of, you have a friend, that friend is in your life forever and they're going to be there forever and that relationship will be there. And I think the Millennials are much more malleable and willing to make a friend here, do this, try that out, and just try so many different things, including people.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, my wife and I, we watched the whole season as well, and it was funny.
It was so good.
I thought about it when, you know, when thinking about stuff to say on this show. I was going to use it for an example as well. But, yeah, I found in the end, all the Gen Xers that were left, and even throughout the game, they were really loyal to their tribe and their, you know, their alliances and stuff. And then, but the, like you said, the Millennials kind of maybe flip-flopped around a little more. And they developed more friendships from it. And, you know, it's kind of like you were saying with your career and stuff. They, you know, they kind of looked at different paths and different opportunities, whereas the Gen Xers were a little more one-sided and kind of like, okay, I'm going to stick with these guys the whole game, and that's, you know, that trust is going to be what's going to get me to the end. So, yeah, it's definitely interesting that, you know, we were talking about that, and that's exactly how that game kind of played out too.
Yeah, and that's the thing that we see in the workplace, is there's this chasm in the marketplace right now that's really fascinating to watch, because I get a lot of Gen Xers and seasoned employees who will do things a certain way, and granted, they have 10, 20, 30 years of experience sometimes, even 40, and they're so valuable, but they're unable to adapt to the new ways of doing things because it's how they've done it for many, many years. And then you have the Millennials who come in, who are willing to try 5, 10, 20, 30 different things and ways of doing things, and can often pick up things in a much faster way. But you have a struggle. I was just telling one of my clients this last week of actually keeping a Millennial for more than 2 years in a job, just like what you said. Okay, 3 years professional golf, now real estate, maybe engineering. And it's a conundrum for employers, I'm not going to lie, because you don't know that Millennial you're going to invest time, energy, whatever it might be into, is going to be with you 2 or 3 years down the road. You'll be lucky if you get a Millennial to stay with you 2 or 3 years, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I feel like, because the Millennials age group is kind of in that 20 to 30 right now, you're still kind of in that starting part of your career. So for me, I feel like, you know, a lot of people in that age, they want to find exactly what they want to do, and then I think that they'll stick with it. But just because, you know, we're at this part of our lives right now, I think that's why kind of the Millennials are more like that. Like you're saying, you know, they're not sticking around for more than 2 or 3 years, is because they're really trying to explore it out. I think eventually Millennials will stick with jobs, and maybe 5 years from now and stuff, where there's going to be a new Millennial, whatever it's going to be called after us. But I think it's just kind of this age group right now that really we want to try different things, and we want to make sure it's exactly what we want to do. And that is different from the Gen Xers, because I think, like you said, my dad is an example. They kind of stuck with something right from the get-go. But I think it's kind of evolved to that. And then I don't know what the next generation is going to be like. But I mean, they might even flip around more. But I think eventually the millennials will kind of settle into, you know, which job or which career that they are the most passionate about, and then that they'll stick with that. But I could be wrong too. They might keep flip flopping.
Well, I think it's interesting too, because I look back at myself with my career, and it was funny because we're packing up our house and getting ready to move, and I actually came across a letter from my old employer that was the catalyst that about 8 years ago had me open my own company. I remember, because like you, I was like, oh, I just want to do this and that and add these ideas on. And even though I was at my first big recruiting company for 5 years, I said to them, I said, guys, the market is changing. This was in about 2008, early 2009. And I said, all these people we got jobs for are now laid off and the market's changing. Why don't we create an arm of this company, the company I used to work for, that helps, you know, empower job seekers and does training and all the stuff that my current company now does. And they literally wrote me out a letter. And I just came across it yesterday, and it said, thank you for your idea. The direction you want to go seems a little bit young and not in line with the company's core values. And of course, it was Gen Xers who owned the company. And they said, we wish you the best of luck in your endeavors in pursuing something along the lines of what you want to do. And had I not gotten that letter from my old company, I wouldn't be sitting here right now hosting a radio show, have a book, have a company. I wouldn't have any of that. But it was because I was like, oh, let's try something different. And as an employer now myself, whenever one of my employees comes to me with an idea and they say, what if we did it this way? I think to myself, that's great. And I think that's the thing, is being able to meld the Gen Xer hardworking, loyal mentality of, yes, you can get something by creating long-term, long-lasting relationships, and the innovation of the millennials and kind of marrying those two together. What are your thoughts, Zach?
I think that both of them together, like you said, is just a perfect mix. It's both the millennials and the Gen Xers can learn a little bit from each other and kind of apply that into their lives and make it their own unique mix. I think that's really the best way there is to live and, you know, to have your career and stuff. I think that that's definitely the way to do it. For me, I mean, for golf and for everything else, I really try to look at other people, other successful people, and I try to learn from them. I try to, you know, pick and choose little things that they do, and I try to apply that to my life and make that, you know, my own special way. But I don't exactly copy exactly what they're saying, but I like to take a little bit here and there from what they're doing and, you know, make it my own. And I think that mix of Gen X and millennials really, really special and really, productive.
Yeah, I think it creates a great symbiotic relationship is perhaps a word that I would use, because if you can create a little bit of both, it's about having the balance. It's almost like last week's show, we were talking to Dr. Dao, who's a top world famous acupuncturist and Chinese medicine expert and professor. And we were talking about how all the elements really have to be in balance. And the same is true in Dr. Dao's word, whether you're a water, earth, fire, you know, metal element, etc. And in our cases, whether you're a millennial or a Gen X or whoever you might be, or a baby boomer for that matter, it's about finding the balance of what are the best characteristics that you can embody from each one of those generations. And like you said, when you're looking at other professional golfers, make it your own. Take ownership of it. Oh, you know, this Gen Xer had this great way of golfing, or this millennial I was, you know, who's a peer, I learned this from. And I think it's like having this big melting pot and just kind of throwing in and making your own sauce of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
And
for
so
sure.
Tell our listeners a little bit about, you know, being a millennial coming up, who were your mentors in golf and what did you learn from your experience being a professional golfer?
Yeah, so my mentors for golf were this one guy's name's Adam Scott. He's an Australian golfer. He was kind of the golfer I looked up to the most. And he's not as well known as Tiger Woods or other ones, but he just really had a nice demeanor to him, and I liked the way he played the game. But the biggest thing I liked about him was, you know, his attitude and how he handled himself on the course. His demeanor was so calm and collective, and, you know, I love watching Tiger Woods, obviously, and guys like that. But, you know, when I watched Adam Scott, the thing that really set him apart from the other players was just the way he handled himself, his composure, And, you know, when other guys would be getting mad and throwing clubs and stuff, he was just, you know, he'd kind of sit back and be like, I don't know why I hit that shot, but, you know, let's make the next one a good one. You know, you could tell he wasn't placing all this negative energy and, you know, all this negative thought on his last shot. But, you know, he'd maybe take 5 seconds. This is what I learned from him is, you know, I read a book about, you know, what he does, and some other golfers as well. They'll take 5 seconds to kind of have a little bit of negative reflection on that shot, but then after that it's just gone. It's filed away, and you're thinking about your next shot. And that was a good life lesson as well for me. But watching him is, I feel like the more you listen to people, you know, as opposed to being, it's good to be outspoken. I know Ian talks a lot, and I love listening to Ian talk, but I can tell when I say something to Ian, you know, he really, sometimes he'll pause for a little bit, and you can tell he's just thinking about what he's going to say, and he always has some crazy intelligent answer for me, because, you know, he reads so much, and, you know, he's just so caught up on everything. But I like that aspect, you know, of Ian and Adam Scott and people like that are really, you know, really collective with their thoughts, and then, you know, when it's the time to talk about it, then they're, you know, they're knowledgeable on what they're gonna say or how they're gonna hit a golf shot. They just really, they're thought out well, and they know, you know, they know exactly what they're gonna do, and they perform it, you know, to the best of their abilities.
So that's interesting. So it sounds like a couple of your mentors were definitely of the Gen X generation. Did you have any mentors who are millennials? And if so, how do you feel, what's it like to either mentor another millennial or to be mentored by one? Do you feel that's something that the millennial generation is open to?
Yeah, I'm really trying to think of one right now, now that you say that, actually. But I know I have a lot of Gen X idols that I look up to, and I think that maybe the millennials just aren't developed enough, because I look up to a lot of really successful business people like Richard Branson. I'm reading his book right now. You know, Elon Musk, he's a little intense, but, you know, I look up to people like that, and, you know, successful golfers as well, but just people who are really, you know, really focused, and they've made something out of their lives from, you know, nothing. I love reading these biographies on these guys. And I don't think that a ton of millennials are at that point now for me to really look up to them. I know some friends and stuff that I admire for who they are as people and stuff. But as far as like public figures go, I can't really recall any right now. Maybe some younger golfers, but even at that, I'd still probably side with some of the Gen Xers a little more. You know, the ones that are kind of on the tipping point. You know that are like 30 years old, like you, right?
Oh, you think I'm 30? That's so sweet, Zach.
Yeah,
I'll take it. I'll totally take it.
You look like you're 30 for sure.
Aw, thank you.
But, you know, Gen Xers, there's a lot to look up to with them, and I think there's a lot that, you know, millennials can learn from when looking at their careers and their lives. So I look up to maybe more Gen Xers. But some of them have a lot of millennial traits too, like Richard Branson in the book I'm reading right now. He's very, you know, he's always trying different businesses and stuff and growing his company Virgin. You know, he started off with a newspaper that he was writing just for students. It was called Student. And then from there, he's really, you know, they came up with the name Virgin for his company, and they did music, records, you know, the airline, mobile. He's in all kinds of different things. And I really look up to him, and I think he kind of resembles the millennial way a little bit in that aspect, is he's really, you know, he's always expanding his horizons, and he's trying different things, and that's why he's so successful. And,
yeah,
you know, if he would have just stayed with that one newspaper, you know, he wouldn't have done anything near what he's done to this day.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because I can see where, whether you're a Gen X or a millennial, you can get stuck too much in that trait of that generation to one extreme or another. Like, for example, what you just said, Richard Branson, had he not been willing to go outside of what was comfortable and outside of the norm, he would have never had this empire and, you know, shuttles going to the moon and so forth. And on the flip side, though, with millennials, I feel like some millennials can get too caught up, or people who are so out-of-the-box creative thinkers and willing to try new things can be so caught up gap in trying a multitude of new things that they don't focus on one thing and grow that one thing. I think that it goes back to what you said earlier about having a healthy foundation of one thing. Like, at least for you, you have golf. You know, without a shadow of a doubt, no matter what happens in your career, you're always going to be an extraordinary golfer. You know, for me, I talk for a living, you know, I can do business development and other things, but we all have that one core characteristic or trait that we can build. And I think that's what you can build the foundation of a company or a career on. But it's important not to get too distracted. And I know for me, I have this syndrome. It's what was that from that great movie Up? Squirrel syndrome, you know, shiny object. Ooh, that looks shiny and fun. And I got myself into trouble with it. When I first opened my company, I had two or three companies. I had a career consulting company and a viral publicity company and a staffing firm. And thank God I was able to hone in on what it was I was really passionate about and focus more on the staffing and the career side, as opposed to getting into publicity. While it was a fun career that I was a chief operating officer of a company that did that, it wasn't something that I was destined to focus my energy and attention on. And I think that's really important too, is knowing when to let go of something that is not your in your highest and best good, I guess is the way I would say it.
Yeah, you definitely need to draw that line. And you know, there's got to be come a point in your life where you've tried so many different things, and now it's like you should have a pretty good idea after all those things what you want to do. Because even when you're choosing those initial careers and paths that you're trying out, I mean, those should be well thought of too. They shouldn't just be, oh, I'm going to try this, and you know, I didn't like this, so I'm going to do this. I mean, for everything, for me, even though I'm doing real estate, engineering, and golf, they're all really well thought out. And you know, I've considered other careers as well when picking those ones. So now I've kind of got it narrowed down to my top three, and from there I know it's going to be one of these three. It's not going to be something else. But I do agree that a lot of millennials, you know, they don't kind of weigh the pros and cons and kind of, you know, narrow it down to a few careers like that, and they just kind of bounce around to everything. And that's why they're not able to choose after a while, like you chose. You know, you need to do what you did, and you know, you need to try the things that you like and that you think you can have a career in, and from there you need to choose the one out of there, the two. But yeah, you have to have it well thought out.
I think it's so funny. You know what I just realized, Zach, while you were saying that, is it all comes back to FOMO. Ian says that to me all the time, fear of missing out. And I think that because we're in such a social media driven world where we are all into one another's business, like we might see somebody post something on Insta or Snapchat or whatever and think, oh, that's shiny and new and fun and different. I want to do that or go that direction or live there. And I think that can be one of the drawbacks, perhaps, of being a millennial or anybody who has a diverse amount of interests, is that it's shiny object syndrome and it's a fear of missing out. Oh, what if I let go of this publicity company, or what if I let go of real estate or golf? Am I going to miss out? And so I think that's why sometimes we kind of hoard it and try to keep it all and then balance it all. And then sometimes our lives can get out of balance. But I do agree that to a certain extent, part of being a young adult or a millennial or wherever people are at is figuring out what's true for you, what makes Zach happy and what makes Zach passionate about, or for any of our listeners, what makes you passionate. When you get out of bed, like you said earlier, Zach, the thing you love about real estate is interacting with people. I met a guy the other day who is my Uber driver, and it was so interesting. Talk about engineering. This guy was brilliant. I'm drawing a blank. I think his name is Tony. If you're out there listening, Tony, shout out to you. And we had this long conversation. His mom was a single mother who put him and his brothers and sisters through school and went on to be a professor of mathematics. And so it was just a natural progression for him to go ahead and pursue this career as like a physicist and mathematician and engineer. And so even though this man is ridiculously intelligent, working for a major engineering company, he Uber drives at night because he misses that interaction with people. And so by the time I got out of his Uber about a 45 minutes later driving to downtown, I said, well, have you considered, you know, I know you're 20, 30 years into your engineering and physicist career. Have you ever considered doing something full time that would allow you to interact with people? And he said, you know, Jen, it's so funny you said that. That's exactly what my plan is. He said, Uber driving has made me realize that my true passion isn't to sit down with numbers, although I'm very good at them, but it's to be in a career where I can go out and interact and have fun and engage with people the way I do when I drive Uber. And so to me, that was just awe-inspiring that here you have this gentleman who's probably in his 50s, maybe even 60, has a successful career, over $100,000 a year, and yet he's looking at making a change. And so all the better to find out this early on in your career of what it is you like. And in your case, if it's dealing with people, then grow that, nurture it, enjoy it.
Yeah, that's awesome for Tony. I'd say keep going for it. You know, do what you love. But when you were talking about FOMO and fear of missing out,
yeah,
I kind of thought of a couple things. It was because I find that a lot of people, you know, Gen Xers, I'll use it as an example at first. They really, and I admire this about them. They start in a career, and you know, they really build upon it, and like Tony did. He really worked at it, and he was up there, and you know, and then in his case, you know, he's kind of maybe he's a little fearful about starting this new career because he's so successful. Maybe because of what his family thinks about it. You know, it's not as socially, it's not as acceptable. I would say not as acceptable, but you know, not as sought after as being an engineer. So you know, the fear of I feel like he almost has a fear of starting something. Then I feel like millennials have a lot of fear of starting something new because they're seeing. You know, they're seen at the very bottom, like me right now, going from being very high up in golf to where I am now, kind of, you know, starting out at the bottom of engineering. I'm really into, like, inspirational quotes and stuff, and I posted this one the other day. It says, the truth is that most people never start because they don't want to be seen starting at the bottom. Don't be most people. And it kind of made me think of that. It was like, you know, you can't really, you got to put that fear aside. And, you know, even if you're starting at the bottom, like Tony, if he's starting to, you know, have his own car company or something, you know, his own limo company, or, you know, if he wants something like that, you know, and he's going to be seen at the bottom, or, you know, if a millennial wants to start something new and they're kind of going to be seen at the bottom, you know, a lot of people have that fear. And I think if you can overcome that fear and just go after it and try those new things, that you love to do, then I think you're going to succeed and you're going to love what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm so happy you said that, Zach. You're absolutely 100% on point. And I love that quote. I remember when you posted it on Facebook the other day, and I'm pretty sure I saved it and liked it because it's so true. It's this fear that holds us back. And there was a book I was reading, I think recently, called Adventures of the Soul. And towards the end of the book, the gentleman who wrote it, I can't remember his name, said something to the effect of, all choices in life come from fear or from love. And if we can really look at our lives and realize that every choice, whether we cross the street, whether we take a job, whether we pursue something new, you can actually see where it does come from fear or love. Are you coming from a place of scarcity, lack, limitation, fear, uncertainty, or love, abundance, acceptance, opportunity? And it's all the perspective through which you see it. And like you said, you could look at it as a bad thing, like the quote you just said about being afraid to be seen at the bottom, or you could see that as an opportunity. Because I will tell you, the more successful you get in your career, it's kind of like that old quote, once you get to the top, you know, there's nowhere to go but down. I remember starting off my career and nobody knew me. And I didn't even think that 7 or 8 years from now, I would have a successful company like I do. And yet I was at the bottom. I started with nothing. And then somebody came in and interviewed with me the other day for an internal job. And they're like, oh, you're Jay Hill. I know all about you. And I was humbled. I'm like, how do you even know who I am? You know, here's this young kid starting off in my profession. And so I think it's really cool if you just take that first step and then the next step and then the next step. And then next thing you know, you're a world famous realtor or, you know, engineer doing civil engineering. You just never know. But it all starts. You can't get anywhere without taking that first step along whatever path it is. And in your case, multiple paths.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, you can't let the fear of failure outweigh your desire to succeed in whatever you want to do. I mean, that, you know, that desire for Tony to be an Uber driver and to start driving people. And, you know, that's got to trump everything else and what he's doing with that. And that's pretty awesome. I admire him for that. You know, and I've met a lot of people because when I was trying to narrow down my three careers, I talked to you about this too. I was considering being an attorney and going to law school.
I hope I talked you out of it. No, I'm just kidding.
No, you did. Well, a lot of people talked me out of it. And like I studied it. I went to different law firms. I shadowed one of our attorney friends down in Long Beach, and I kind of I really, nothing against attorneys, but for me, when I exposed myself to that environment and those people, I knew that wasn't who I was. I know you initially told me that too, like right away before I talked to all these people. And so for me personally, that wasn't who I was. But I still, you know, in my heart, I wanted to explore that, and I wanted to see, you know, is this something that I want to do? And, you know, after meeting with people and talking to people, I knew it wasn't for me. And it is for a lot of people. It's an amazing profession. But for me, my personality, it wasn't for me.
Zach, I really want to take a moment and acknowledge you, because what you did was incredible. I mean, talk about building a foundation. So many people do what I call reactive job hunting, or career planning for that matter. And what I mean by that is you just react to circumstances or situations. Oh, I'm going to go try out being an attorney and invest hundreds of thousands of dollars in law school and go to school for 3 years. And they never even take that first step to actually respond and to think through. And that's something too that I've heard some millennials get a little bit of slough about, which is being proactive rather than reactive. You proactively asked yourself, what do I want to do? And then went out, physically even went out, and looked into several different careers. And that's not something that people often do. And when I get a lot of recent college graduates who come my way and meet us at my company, I just had a gentleman in the other day, that's something I tell them is go out and interview, shadow, ask people, go, you know, call for informational interviews in any career that you're thinking about, and invest that time and energy before you invest 5, 10, 20 years of your life in a career you don't like or fall into the wrong job. You have to go out there and do informational interviews or shadow people just like you did. When people are starting off, I tell them to use LinkedIn. Look up people who have the job that you think you want. Call them up and ask for an informational interview. I get a handful of emails every year from people who ask me about that, and I'm always happy to take the time out to pay it forward and to give people information on a career they might not be familiar with. And I'll tell them the good, the bad, and the ugly about any career, whether it's recruiting, writing a book, or having a radio show. There are positives and negatives to each of it, and you won't know until you ask the right questions or put yourself in that position. So I really commend you, Zach, because that's a huge breakthrough to have done that.
Yeah, and I feel like anything in life, you really need to educate yourself, and you need to go out and actually expose yourself to whatever you're trying to make a decision on. And, you know, the more educated you are on it, you're going to be able to handle your decision or your whatever choice you're making in a lot better manner than you would just being unprepared. And anything I do, if I'm going out golfing, you know, if I'm going to a golf tournament and stuff, you know, I want to be educated on, you know, where I'm going, what the field's going to be, am I my best game, am I going to invest this money to go in this golf tournament, or do I feel like I'm not ready for it? You know, anything you do, I mean, you really have to be thought out, and you have to make sure 110% that you're, you know, you're ready to give that a try. And even if you fail, at least you tried.
Yeah, it's about preparation. That's the thing. I tell people this all the time when they go into job interviews. Don't bother showing up for the interview unless you've spent a minimum of an hour to an hour and a half preparing, whether it's preparing for interview questions, researching the company. It's that preparation. Same thing. Don't go invest several hundreds of thousands of dollars into any sort of program, be it a professional program, a attorney, doctor, et cetera, whatever that might look like, unless you've done your due diligence and you've really thought it through. So that way you're not just in a position where you're a victim 3 or 5 or 10 or 20 years down the road, feeling sorry for yourself that you wound up in a crappy job that you hate.
Yeah. Totally. And, you know, I think that a lot of people too, like they're so focused on the end game and they're focused on being committed and all this stuff that, you know, they're thinking, oh, I want to be a doctor, and they're not really, you know, they don't realize all these little habits that they have to have and these little things that they have to do to really, you know, to do every single day, you know, even whether you feel like it or not, you have to do these things every day and to get to that end goal. And you have to figure out if those habits is what you want your life to be like. You know, for me, being a real estate agent right now, I spend a lot of time, you know, going on the computer, looking at houses, talking with people. It's a lot of talking. Real estate's all talking. Like, you just talk and develop friendships, and, you know, and I have to figure out for myself right now. I love it, but I have to figure out, is that what I want to, are those the habits that I want to have every day? Do I want to go find all these deals, close these deals, go to houses, and, you know, sell houses. Is that the daily habits that I want to have, or do I want to, you know, go the engineering way and be looking at plans and analyzing those, or do I want to be golfing and traveling all over and doing that? And it's really, I feel like in life, you know, it's more about the habits that you develop and your daily routine and habits that really kind of define who you are, as opposed to, you know, people being like, oh, I want to be a lawyer, and that, you know, they don't really search it out and research it like we were talking about. You really have to analyze the habits of those people. And that's when I went and talked to lawyers, that's what I did. Our one friend Greg Silver works in Long Beach, and I went and shadowed him, and I kind of saw his daily life and the habits that he had. And for me, I mean, they were great habits. I mean, he's a member at Virginia Country Club, great places, but, you know, for me, that it wasn't the daily routine that I wanted. And when I kind of met with other people, other engineers and real estate agents, that was more appealing to me. So I feel like you really have to research the lifestyle of these careers, as opposed to just the title in the end game.
I think that's so important, and I'm so happy that you shared that with our listeners, because I think it's something that we don't consider. We just kind of fall into jobs and we don't think twice about it. And the other fun thing is, when you're in a position like yourself, which it sounds like you're already doing, is you get to evaluate what aspects of this job do I enjoy the most and what do I enjoy the least. And then slowly but steadily, you can start to carve out, and, you know, the statue of what does it look like? What does your ideal career look like? And how does that show up for you? And it's carving out all the pieces that are not you.
Yeah, definitely.
That's brilliant. And one last thing for our listeners that I will share with you that I think is very helpful. And I was just reading a book, I think it was last night, by Louise Hay. And of course, she's the creator of Hay House. And her story is so inspirational, of how she started off by writing these little blue books that were about healing your body and healing your life. And she printed out 5,000 copies, not even barely having enough money to do that, and started handing them out. And then next thing you know, she's one of the top publishing companies in the world for self-help books. But what I loved is, in the story I was reading, it was a little bit biographical about her life. She was sharing with the interviewer about how she starts her day every day in a positive way, which ties into what you just said, Zach. And so she starts her day, and she kind of, before she even gets out of bed, she kind of is grateful, and she's like, my gosh, thank you, I can get out of bed, I'm healthy, I'm happy. Then she goes and nourishes her body with whatever it was for her, you know, tea or coffee or something that makes her feel good, and gives herself that time every morning to center herself. And then she speaks out loud her intentions, which I thought was really cool. So for me, every day, I start with the top 10 things I'm most grateful for, and I send myself an email with them in case I'm ever having a bad day and I need to, you know, be represents the gratitude that's missing for me. And then I write out a list of both weekly, monthly, and daily of my intentions. And so one of the cool things she said that she does is she declares her intentions in the present tense every day. So if she knows she's going into, say, in your case, Zach, an important real estate meeting, she'll presence out loud an affirmation, and she'll say, I have an easy effort, or I've, yeah, you would say present tense. I have an easy, effortless, connected meeting with Bob Smith, who signs me on to represent him on selling his house, or I get a hole in one at blah, blah, blah tournament. And you speak it out loud every morning as part of your intentions and turn it into an affirmation. And I just really love that. I'm going to start playing with that now for myself, and thought it tied into what you just shared.
Yeah, I like that. And I'm sure you know about this. This is what I kind of base my lifestyle off of every day. It's called MEDS, like meditation, exercise, diet, and sleep.
Love
and
it.
For me, that keeps my mind and my spirit in a good place for me, and I feel good every single day. And when I heard about that and when I implemented that into my life, it kind of made me think of you, because I know you're very reflective like that, and, you know, you live a very healthy lifestyle. And for me, that kind of, you know, I do that every day. I get up very early, and before I go to the gym, I like sitting down for 10 minutes, just block out silence, nothing. And I like to, my wife taught me this, her sports psychologist taught her this, and she passed it on to me, but you sit and you try to just block everything out, and you're going to get these little voices in your head, and they're called you call them the kindergartners or whatever. We call them the kindergartners. And you can have these voices like, oh, is it 10 minutes yet? What's that noise in the background? All these things. And you want to train your mind to really block these things out. and to, you know, throughout your day, this is going to come in handy throughout your day. You know, when you're getting those voices in your head, and you know you got to address some of them, but you have to block them out, and your mind needs to be healthy like that. So for meditation, that really helps for me, and then obviously exercise, going to the gym. I go very early, and I feel really good the rest of the day. Diet and sleep, I mean, those are obvious. You know, you just need to eat healthy and sleep healthy. But that really made me think of you, because when I spend time with you and Ian, you know, I can definitely tell that you implement those into your life very well.
Oh, that's brilliant, Zach. I love that you just shared that with our listeners. So it's MEDS, right?
M-E-D-S. Yeah.
So it's meditate, exercise, diet, and sleep.
MEDS.
That's brilliant. Yeah, it's so great. And it's so true. And in Louise Hay's book, same thing. It doesn't matter how chaotic your life is, whether, like, look at Zach, you were just saying you have, my God, like a 15-hour day ahead of you every day, and yet you still find those 10 minutes. So even if you have 12 screaming kids, 5 dogs, a cat, and a partridge in a pear tree, you still have that opportunity. It's not something you need to do. And I really want to take a moment to distinguish this before we wrap up. It's not something you need to do. It's not something you should do. It's an opportunity you have to proactively create each and every day, to allow that silence and to have that peace within you. That way, when you go out into the world, you can bring that with you wherever you go, and that centers you. And I think what Zach just shared is the perfect way to play around with it. Be conscientious of getting enough sleep and what it is you're putting into your body, and make sure to, if you can't exercise, walk a couple miles every day. And whether or not you formally meditate, there's a great app out there called Headspace. I know a lot of people love for testing out if you've never meditated before, or a wonderful meditation studio as well on the West Side called Unplugged Meditation. And no matter what it looks like, even if you just sit there with your eyes open and practice what Zach said and just work on letting go of the thoughts, some people write them down, I guarantee you, moment by moment, day by day, your days will become more peaceful and more grounded and more balanced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Thank you so much, Zach. We're running out of time. So next week, tune in. I am having Todd Raphael on the show to talk about trends upcoming that we're anticipating in 2017 in both recruitment and in job hunting and different things that we're seeing happen with the market. And of course, to all of our listeners out there, no matter where in the world you are, what you might be celebrating, Happy Kwanzaa, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, anything else that I'm forgetting, just sending everybody out there a wish of kindness, love, happiness, prosperity, and joy with your families, whatever that looks like for you. So thank you so much for tuning in. You can always find us on iTunes at Get Yourself the Job on iTunes and download us for free or subscribe. And we look forward to having you tune in next week, and happy holiday to all. Thank you again, Zach, for being here with us today.
Thanks, Jen. Happy holidays to everyone. Be safe.
Thank you so much. All right.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.